The next case on our calendar is 97379 Dorothy Heckler versus D.O. Summers Cleaners and Shirt Laundry Company. Mr. Potash.
Morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Leslie Potash, along with Stonecrow Council. We are here on behalf of the Court of Tax. I'd also like to take a moment to thank and acknowledge Mark Kendrick, who also prepared a brief on as a friend of the Court. And he's here also on behalf of the 10 million citizens of the state of Ohio. He reports in this case to this Court. Your Honor, the facts that brings us to this Court actually arise from some of the admonitions we all received as a kid. Our mothers would tell us not to touch a hot stove because we get burned, not to run with a pointed stick, poke out an eye, or to pick that off the floor because somebody will trip and get hurt. In this instance, Mr. Morris Barber, the presser D.O. Summers, didn't listen to his mother because he created an obstruction, left it there, over which Dorothy Texman tripped. This matter was tried to a jury. The jury determined. Eight fine citizens of Cuyahoga County spend 2 days trying to determine what to do, and they, by a 6-2 verdict, found that Dorothy Texter was entitled to recover for the severe injury to her wrist that she received.
And no contrib.
I'm sorry?
And no contributory.
No, 100% to nothing, Your Honor. Candidly, whether it was 100 to nothing or 51-49, it really wouldn't matter. It's just that these six citizens, by a 6-2 verdict, determined that Dorothy Texter was entitled to recover for the negligence of the D.O. Summers. The matter went up on appeal. It went to three other reasonable people. By a 2-1 verdict, they could not unanimously agree as to the facts of the case. They decided to reverse, saying that a reasonable person would not get tripped for this. We're now here before the ultimate reasonable people to determine whether or not Dorothy Texter should be entitled to recover.
This is quite a case. We've got somebody representing 10 million people, and that's the most important case we've heard all day. Is that?
Well, it is more.
We should give you more time to argue it.
The importance of this case, Your Honor, stems from the constitutional right to a trial by jury to the determination of when and how a court should direct a verdict to the responsibilities of the defendant not to create an obstruction on behalf of a pedestrian. So, I mean, depending on the highest level of the Constitution to the ordinary care that one must undertake on a daily basis, this is of great importance.
On what basis do you read the Court of Appeals' opinion, and on what basis did they reverse?
Your Honor, there are two factors that I perceive.
I want to know about manifest weight.
The first.
Okay.
What they did is, in their opinion, flat out, they said that they weighed the evidence and found that Dorothy Texter was more negligent than D.O. Summers.
Okay, now when there's a jury verdict, doesn't that take unanimous?
You said so. You said so on many occasions. And I would think that that would apply. I don't know why the Court of Appeals did what it did. That's why you accepted this case, and that's why I hope you'll reverse it.
Well, they didn't reverse on manifest weight. That they aren't allowed to do that, right?
I don't know. Well, they did not say manifest weight, right. Absolutely, because you need a 3-0 vote for manifest weight, and that's what it was. But they, in essence, that's what they did. They compared it, and they basically said, we don't believe it was 100 to nothing. We believe it was less than 50 to more than 50, and then they reversed it. Now, whether you call it manifest weight or comparable negligence, I mean, we have a loss to explain how they arrived at that conclusion without saying it's weight the evidence. If they weigh the evidence, they're allowed to do that. If they're not allowed to do that, then the Court of Appeals decision shouldn't hold up. So the first issue the Court of Appeals did was weigh the evidence, which they're not allowed to do. The second issue the Court of Appeals said is that there was no proximate cause. And again, I didn't write, I can only read what they wrote. And I'm trying to figure out for the legacy, you have the four criteria for negligence: duty, breach, proximate cause, and damages. You have a duty not to place an obstruction in the way of a person. You have a breach by placing and maintaining the obstruction in the way of a person. You have a person tripping over the obstruction that shouldn't have been there. And you have a fractured wrist with the surgery and all that other damage. I guess if I'm trying to figure out what might not be a proximate cause in the situation.
If we go with your interpretation, have you believed the 10 million citizens of Ohio are due to look for their walking?
You have never relieved anybody from looking where they're walking. This Court has said.
And didn't she say, if I had looked at it?
I believe she said, if I had looked at that specific thing, yes, I would have seen it at the time.
And isn't that what the Court of Appeals said? If she had looked, she would have been there for the matter of law. She was there.
The Court of Appeals said that she should have seen that which was there. And the argument in what 6 out of 8 jurors accepted was a testimony that given that Saturday noon, the busiest shopping day in that class, 25, and traffic, and...
So if there's lots of activity going on, you don't want to have an obligation to watch where you're going?
Well, you know, interesting, this court in Cash versus Cincinnati was faced with the exact same issue on contributory negligence, when that was a much harder standard, when you don't have any degree of approximate cause on your part would dictate any opportunity to collect. In Cash...
You do indeed, but had she looked, she would have seen.
Had she seen it, had she looked at the act and seen it, then there's no question. But the point was, she was looking where she was going. There was never any testimony before the court that she was not looking where she was going. And the same thing with Dorothy Poole. And Dorothy, again, Your Honor, when she walked into the door, she wouldn't have fallen over the cross or tripped over the concrete. She didn't do that. Dorothy Poole, had she perceived that happened, she would have said, let's move over this side and avoid the obstruction. She didn't perceive that hazard. She testified she didn't see it. Maybe way back then I saw something stopping the door, but I didn't see that thing sticking over the edge of the door and then the concrete sticking over the edge of the bucket. We didn't see that. And so the question is not whether she saw what she should have saw. The question is, did the jury accept what the testimony was at trial? That wasn't her fault. And that's where I come to you and say that the jury is the ultimate determiner of facts. They determine the fact. The Court of Appeals, whether they liked or didn't like the result, that's not their business. Their business is to determine whether legally the instructions given to the jury were correct, whether there was proper procedure followed, whether the objections were sustained or overruled, whatever, but they don't weigh the facts.
But we have lots of briefs that claim the jury made a mistake. We have lots of briefs that claim the Court of Appeals made a mistake. What new proposition of law would you have us write by deciding this case? Because that's the only way to stay here. What legal principle do we decide other than saying one side made a mistake on that, the other side didn't? What legal principle, what new principle of law are we interpreting that made a mistake?
The principle, I don't know if it's new, candidly, it's not a new principle to tell a court that a directed verdict requires.
It's not a new principle, it shouldn't be here, right?
The principle has to do with assuring you not only create new principles, and I'll try to answer that as best as I can, but Your Honor, candidly, I'm looking at it in the fact that this court not only has a duty, there was comment earlier about an active judicial bench. I'm not asking anybody to be active. So there's a duty to preserve, protect, and defend. We have a right to preserve, protect, and defend the system of a trial by jury.
Well, this is an error case. This is an error case. The Court of Appeals, the argument is the Court of Appeals made a mistake. The principles of law are very, I mean, that you said in your proposition of law are well, I mean, they're well-founded principles. And
they are
smart to state them as your principles of law because we can't draw a new principle of law from the facts in this case, can we?
I don't know of a principle of law that you can draw from the facts of this case, but that doesn't make it an unimportant case. Every so often this
it's an error case. We sometimes take error cases, and it's here. We'll decide it, but it's an error case, is it not?
I believe it's an error case. Your Honor, at that point, I think that I would reserve the rest of my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Portash. Mr. Imbergada.
Imbergada, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is James Imbergada. I represent the appellee, D.O. Summers of Laundry and Dragon. Basically, we would like to supplement the facts given by Mr. Portash. On August 21st, 1993, at 12:05 p.m., it was a sunny day. Dorothy Textler and a companion, Dorothy Wool, were walking past Theo Summers, the side of their store, going to a Chinese restaurant where they went regularly for lunch. Both were aware that it was common for Theo Summers to prop open this side service door for ventilation when it was hot. That was common knowledge, and they both acknowledged that door had been propped open in the past. There was absolutely nothing obstructing the view of the door or bucket from at least 40 feet away, 40 paces away. That is undisputed. The plaintiff produced, Ms. Textler produced no evidence that there was an obstruction to the bucket or the door.
But the Court of Appeals seemed to say that as a matter of law, there was only one person liable here, and that was the plaintiff. That's a pretty, on these facts, that's a pretty hard statement to support, isn't it? As a matter of law, when there's an obstruction in the sidewalk and somebody's walking toward it and they apparently hit it and fall. I mean, that's a matter of law that they, at least comparative negligence, isn't there? I mean, the jury didn't find that, but is that what is bothering the Court of Appeals here, do you think?
Chief Justice Moore, I think that what was bothering the Court of Appeals in this matter is the plaintiff or the appellant in this case, Dorothy Texer, did not reach her threshold. She did not satisfy the threshold of an issue of fact upon which reasonable minds can disagree. Your Honor, we understand that the jury verdict was against the appellee in this matter, but we would submit, and the Court of Appeals properly found, two wrongs don't make a right. This situation should have never gotten to the court, to the finder of fact, because the plaintiff, the Dorothy Texler, the pedestrian, failed to create an issue of fact upon which reasonable minds would disagree. This court held in O'Day versus Webb that a trial court must submit a determinative issue to the jury if there is sufficient evidence to allow reasonable minds to disagree, but must withhold that determinative issue from a jury if the court finds, after construing the evidence most favorably to the non-movement, that reasonable minds cannot disagree and that the movement is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Proximate cause, Your Honors, it's well established Ohio law that proximate cause exists only where an injury is a natural foreseeable result of the defendant's negligence. An injury that is not reasonably anticipated as a probable result of a negligent act is not actionable. That is based upon the edicts of this court.
Counsel, does the Solon ordinance that says you can't put things out on the sidewalk bolster the plaintiff's case here?
We don't believe so, Your Honor. It doesn't alleviate the appellant in this matter, Dorothy Texler, to satisfy a prima facie case of actionable negligence. That is duty, breach, and proximate causation. The Court of Appeals in this matter did not weigh the evidence. The Court of Appeals examined the evidence that was produced solely by Dorothy Texler and her witness, a person standing right next to her, and properly determined that Dorothy Texler failed to create an issue of fact on that determinative issue of proximate causation. We believe, Your Honor, that it's the law of this state is that, sure, a plaintiff, a litigant, is entitled to a trial by jury on disputed issues of fact, but they must satisfy the Rule 5084 burden of creating that issue. The Court of Appeals examined the evidence in this case and found that they didn't. Ohio courts have consistently held for a dangerous, open, and obvious, a defendant may reasonably expect that persons will discover and protect themselves against them. That principle of law comes from the Courts of Appeals of this state and is based upon this court's decision in Still v. Humphrey back in 1968. Both Texler and her companion, Dorothy Rule, testified that the door was open, obvious, and clearly visible. Rule testified it was normal to have the door propped open on hot days. They knew the door was propped open with some object. She and Dorothy Texler were walking side by side. Rule and Texler's attention were apparently directed straight ahead. When they turned the corner, which is the corner is approximately 40 paces away from where this door was being propped open with the 5-gallon bucket, it was open, obvious, and clearly visible from that distance. This isn't a Cash versus Cincinnati situation where the hazard only became apparent when you come up to it.
For its holding, the Court of Appeals cited Raflo. What are the facts of Raflo?
In Raflo, Your Honor, the plaintiff stepped over a step into a country club, which admittedly exceeded the Ohio Basic Building Code. And the court in that case said that the plaintiff has an obligation to avoid a known peril. If apparel is open, obvious, and clearly visible, then the individual is charged with knowledge of it and has a duty under Ohio law to avoid that.
But wasn't the known peril in Raflo even clearer than it was here with a bunch of people walking down a sidewalk? I mean, in Raflo, as I remember, that person stepped right off like a curb into a hole of some sort.
Your Honor, we would disagree on the record in this case. There is no evidence of an obstruction. The Court of Appeals in this matter correctly determined that speculation does not create an issue of fact. Ms. Texler was asked point blank, "Do you have any knowledge that your view was obstructed by anything, ma'am? Her response was, "Not at this point." And that's on page 151 of the trial transcript. The record in this case is replete with circumstances that there were no obstructions. Yes, there were arguments. There were no facts. And that was the basis for the trial court's determination that, on this basis of this record, there was no jury issue created. We believe that affirmance of reversal of the Court of Appeals in this matter and reinstatement of the jury verdict on this record would render an owner, an occupier, an insurer of pedestrian safety. There is absolutely no justification under Ohio law for such a result.
Counsel, let me play with the facts just a little. Say on a public sidewalk, a child's scooter is crossing the whole sidewalk, and somebody walks up the walk. And you have such an ordinance as you have here as well. Walking up that public sidewalk, sees the scooter. And instead of the man, maybe this person's wearing high-heeled shoes and it's rained recently, so the ground is soft. So rather than walking out of the grass with a tree lawn, which is not, the person decides to step over the scooter. That is your case, then, sir, or not? I mean, it's visible, the person saw it. All of that.
Your Honor, on that issue, we believe that the, although the issue is, the facts are different than that presented here, we believe that a court could find on that basis that the plaintiff in that case failed to use reasonable care for her own safety as a matter of law in the means and manner in which she attempted to put the bucket. What may create a condition is she did attempt to discharge her duty under law, Ohio law, by attempting to avoid the open and obvious condition. In this, the scenario before this court is the Dorothy Texter made absolutely no effort, and in fact ignored an open and obvious condition. And there is no justification for holding an occupier, an insurer of a pedestrian safety. I believe on the facts of this case and the law that's determined if we accept the plaintiff's contentions, an owner-occupier of commercial premises would owe a grant duty to a pedestrian and they would someone within their store, a business invitee within their store. We don't believe that there's any justification for that. This court and the courts of this state have held that, you know, owner of occupier has a duty of reasonable care. That duty does not extend to guard against or protect a pedestrian or an invitee against dangers which are known or so obvious and apparent that the pedestrian or the invitee may reasonably be expected to discover that and protect themselves against it. That's the law that we believe that the court should consider what was done in the basis of the duty.
And counsel, though, you suggest this case could be onerous for owners and occupiers of land, but on the other hand, it could be distinguished owners and occupiers of land who violate an ordinance or owners and occupiers of lands who have a situation that amounts, because of violation of an ordinance, amounts to negligence per se.
I mean, negligence per se is not liability per se.
I understand.
This court has recognized that. Furthermore, the ordinance, accepting the Court of Appeal decision that the ordinance creates a duty and the ordinance creates a breach, arguably. That does not give...
I know your issue is proximate cause, but if the broad spectrum of owners and occupiers, you know, we could make a separate class. I mean, it could be distinguishable by someone who actually violates an ordinance, which this owner did.
We don't believe that would be justifiable in this case because the ordinance is an exception to the no duty rule. Under the common law of the state, an owner-occupier has no duty to a pedestrian. The court has created, and the courts of Ohio have created exceptions where there is an ordinance. There is a duty. Then we must determine whether the plaintiff meets that threshold requirement and creates an issue of fact. Dorothy Texter, in this case, testified that there was nothing obstructing her vision of this bucket as she approached. She knew that the door was propped open on prior occasions. Texler observed that the door was open prior to her fall. She did not recall anyone obstructing her view. If she would have looked, she would have avoided the obstruction. Your Honor, we believe that the law of Ohio on obstructions is something that is open and obvious is not reasonably dangerous. We believe that that is proper because someone is expected to avoid the obvious. You have to keep a lookout for your surroundings. You cannot throw caution to the winds and remain oblivious of that which is happening ahead of you. That is what occurred in this case, and we believe that this court would set a dangerous precedent by relieving the pedestrian of their duty to look, their duty to observe the obvious under Ohio law. On the basis of the undisputed evidence, the Court of Appeals found that appellant D.O. Summers could not reasonably have foreseen that in broad daylight, Dorothy Texler would trip over a 5-gallon bucket, which was propping open a large metal side door. We believe that on the basis of the evidence that was produced by Dorothy Texler and her liability witness at trial, that is the only reasonable result that could be made on these facts. You are only entitled to a trial by jury if you create an issue of fact. On the basis of this case, the basis of the facts presented, the Court of Appeals properly determined there was no issue of fact determined. If this court is to determine that an individual that calls a defendant into court is entitled to a jury trial on mere speculation, we would be obviating and abrogating the common law of this state, and what would keep the trial court from denying every motion for summary judgment and forcing a jury trial in every case where someone says, oh, I didn't see it, although it was open, obvious, and clear to this. We believe that that would be the improper result under Ohio law. Next, this court found in Jung versus Brothers that a court may award judgment in favor of the defendant where it finds as a matter of law that plaintiff's negligence exceeded any negligence of defendant. And the Ohio appellate courts have grounded directed verdict in proof of sufficient comparative negligence. We believe that and we suggest that the reasonable proposition of law to be made in this case here is that in a premise liability action, a court must sustain a directed verdict in favor of the defendant when, after construing the evidence in favor of the claimant, reasonable minds could only conclude that the claimant failed to avoid a hazard, which was open, obvious, and discoverable by an ordinary inspection. We don't believe that's new law. We believe that that's the law that should be applied to the situation, and that has been applied by the Court of Ohio in determining whether an owner-occupier is responsible for obstruction. Finally, for the foregoing reasons, the appellate D.O. Summers Laundry and Dry Cleaners respectfully request that this court affirm the decision of the 8th District Court of Appeal in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mergato. Mr. Potash, you've saved almost 7 minutes of your time. You don't have to feel compelled to use it.
I will try to see if I can save a little bit of time. I do want to address a couple of issues brought up by Mr. Imbrogada that I think are some important, maybe even may concern this court as to when it's for this new proposition of law. And the first thing I would like to discuss is the last issue Mr. Imbrogada raised, and that is about Jung. This court first applied the comparative negligence statute and a directed verdict with that Jung decision. And what this court said is that, and granted, the first half of the relevant portion has been cited throughout by courts of appeals throughout the state, saying that there may be circumstances which may arise wherein a directed verdict in a comparative negligence case would be proper. But this court in Jung adopted the language of the late Justice Potter Stewart when he says, I know it when I see it, but this isn't it. And that's what this court did in Jung. This wasn't it in Jung, and if you take a look at the line of cases that followed it, with one exception, this court said, no, we will not permit directed verdicts for comparative negligence. Is that issue? We want juries to determine that.
In fact, the Jung case said, as I recall it, inappropriate circumstances was the
inappropriate, word. And you did not go on to say what inappropriate circumstance was, but you went on to say, in all the other cases, save one, this isn't it. This is not an appropriate circumstance, no matter what the relative weights of the negligence or proximate cause is. We want a jury to determine this, and then you go on and praise the jury system because that is the backbone of our fundamental freedoms. The one case that you didn't was Pond versus Lessing. And in that case, you directed a verdict in favor of plaintiff because of a negligence per se. That was the one case, as I can find,
that this court permitted a directed verdict on comparative negligence and saying that the plaintiff is entitled to the verdict because of negligence per se on the defendant. There was a negligence per se issue presented to the trial court. It chose not to accept it. We didn't argue it here, and we're not appealing it because there was negligence to begin with. There are two things to remember. They put an obstruction on the sidewalk. Now, first of all, they're violating an ordinance that says you can't put an obstruction on the sidewalk. You can keep it there. But other than that, they put an obstruction, they left the door 50% covering the sidewalk, and then they put this obstruction, which stuck out further than the door, and then the concrete further than the bucket. So in essence, it took almost 65% of the sidewalk. And you have the facts that were given to the jury, and again, time and again, this court has said, we want the jury as the finders of fact. And I don't know, with all due respect, I don't know what trial Mr. Brigada saw, but when a jury comes back 100-0 for plaintiff, doesn't that give you an idea that the evidence presented to that jury was such that the plaintiff wasn't at fault? And what I hear Mr. Imbergata and D.L. Summers say from day one of this case through this court is that this court should adopt what we may call the dingbat or nitwit rule. The dingbat or nitwit rule is like a syllogism. Only a dingbat can trip over something and break an arm, and under those circumstances can never recover. Dorothy Texler tripped over something, broke an arm, therefore she can't recover. But there exists one set of facts.
Hope she's not here. You're calling her names.
But is there one set of facts for which you could say, maybe it wasn't her fault? I submit by 100%-0, we have it. She's not a dingbat, she's not a nitwit. She took care for herself. The jury had the opportunity to observe, inspect, and judge the various people who testified. And they found by 100-0.
But you say she took care for herself, but according to records from her deposition, the question is, isn't the fact if you would have looked, if you would have seen the bucket, yes, if I would have looked down, and you'll agree that if you would have looked, you wouldn't have fallen correct, yes. How do you get around that?
Because it's just like saying, isn't it true that if you didn't get in the car, you would have gotten a collision? That has nothing to do with the pretty bar
stretch.
Well, I don't, Your Honor, but
I... Didn't her companion also testify that she didn't even notice the door open?
They noticed that the door was open, but they didn't notice why or how it was open. They didn't look into the door. That's the, Your Honor, having looked into the door, it deals with the door was open just all the way towards the wall. We said the door was perpendicular. Again, the jury had the opportunity to observe, and the facts in this case are such that it belongs solely to the jury. One other important factor, Your Honor, the Court of Appeals didn't call this an open and obvious case that said we don't permit this case to go to a court because of primary assumption of risk. The Court of Appeals said we found a duty, we found a breach, we got hung up on proximate cause. Your Honor, that's this open and obvious is not to prevent the lawsuit, it's for the determination of comparative negligence. That's what the open and obvious is. Their claim of open and obvious. We don't say it was open, or maybe open, but it wasn't obvious. Nobody hid it, I grant you. Nobody put a cover over that bucket. By the same token,
it couldn't be much more obvious, could it? I mean, a bucket sitting on a sidewalk, how could it be more obvious to anyone who's observing?
How could it be more obvious?
How could it be any more obvious? You said it's not open and obvious.
I said, it's like anything else. It's all relative to the facts at the time. If this were Sunday morning, 6 a.m., nobody in the store, nobody in the parking lot, no nothing, and she goes jogging along the sidewalk and she goes, oops, I tripped over a bucket in the middle of the sidewalk.
Nitwit.
That's the circumstances for which the rule would apply, and I wouldn't be here. But again, if you take a look at Cat versus Cincinnati, which to me is the most definitive of this court's decisions that were made applicable here, you have in the middle of a noon hour in downtown Cincinnati a sidewalk which appeared to otherwise be open and obvious with the depression by the feet, and this court said, you know, a jury should decide whether she should be able to recover or whether comparative or contributory negligence would prevent any recovery. Here it's a comparative negligence case. The jury found this court has on one occasion and most recently basically said that at the very least the verdict rendered by a jury in favor of plaintiffs gives a strong indication that reasonable minds can come to a conclusion on the evidence different than that conclusion which was ultimately given by the trial judge. This is exactly this case. Reasonable people obligated to affirm that transfer. And as such, I would ask that this court reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals and reinstate the trial court's judgment and remand the matter to the Court of Appeals. That would be on the issue that was raised on our cross.
Thank you, Mr. Potash.
Thank you very much.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.